Hi, this is Marian Samuel from the Caribbean Radio Lighthouse in Antigua. Every Wednesday at 12:30 p.m., we interview a guest about real-life issues from the Caribbean. Welcome to Lighthouse Conversations, a time to explore the issues surrounding your everyday existence. Your family, your community, your environment, your health and safety habits, your lifestyle, both physically and spiritually, will all be discussed here on Lighthouse Conversations. Let's get started and see just what we can learn to better your life.
Welcome to another episode of Lighthouse Conversation. I am Marian Samuel, your host for the program, and with me on the phone is Dr. Yazigi, Chief Oncologist at the Sir Lester Bird Medical Center since 2021. Also, the Consultant Medical Oncologist at the Sir Lester Bird Medical Center. He is the Medical Director at OncoMed 268 at Suite Number 2 of the Gambles Medical Center on Fries Hill Road. He has been an oncologist since 2017. He is a member of the National Stem Cell Oversight Committee and the National Cervical Cancer Task Force. He attends to patients with all types of cancers and learn how to diagnose and treat them. Welcome, Dr. Yazigi, to Lighthouse Conversation.
Thank you so much for having me, my dear. How are you doing?
I am doing fine, thank you, and I trust you are doing well as well.
Yes, I am, thank you.
Okay. Dr. Yazigi, our first question for today, what is oncology?
All right, very good question. Oncology is the study of cancers or malignancies. So an oncologist is a doctor who has undergone training in the science of oncology and is certified to diagnose and treat cancer.
Okay. To get to know who I will be hearing from for the next few minutes, why did you choose this field of medical?
Very, very, very good question. And a question that I have been asked repeatedly in the past is one of the first things. Why do you want to do this? What attracted you to do something like this? Well, really and truly, my dear, it has always been a point of interest or a field of interest for me ever since I started medical school. First, it was piqued by when we were studying cellular biology and we learned how neoplastic cells or cancer cells behave. The behavior of the cells is so akin to how human beings themselves behave, and especially evil human beings, and we'll get to that in a moment. But that piqued my interest from the beginning, and I wanted to learn more about how the disease behaved itself. Also, my grandmother unfortunately passed away from colon cancer, and that was a big toll on the family. And I realized how important it was for her to have an oncologist that was always available to her when she needed any questions answered or she was undergoing any symptoms, because it was a new experience for the entire family. And after that, more recently, of course, my uncle also passed away to pancreatic cancer. So it's always been something that has interested me. And I guess after going through with my grandma during her battle with cancer, it kind of, you know, confirmed that this is what I wanted to do. So when I got into medical school, and as I said, we started learning about how cancer works and how it moves and how it acts. It kind of put the crosses on the T's and the dots on the I's for me in relating to oncology, and I decided that that is exactly the field I would want to pursue. More than that is the pleasure that you get from when you see somebody come in and, you know, they're feeling hopeless and they don't feel like there's anything that can be done for them, and you know, you comfort them, you put their mind at ease, and you give them all of the treatment options, and you, especially in early cancer, and you know, you tell them, don't worry, we can cure you, your cancer is in advance, if you remove it and we give you this and this therapy, you're likely going to be much better. And just to see how they are the first day that they meet you, and when you're finished treatment, how happy and how pleased they are, and to see them go on with life and the relationships that you form, it means a lot to me, and I'm happy that I chose the field, to be honest.
Oh, great. Give the listener some reasons for visiting the oncologist.
So the oncologist is the doctor that specializes in cancer diagnosis and treatment. Most of the time, when you visit an oncologist, it's to because you've been diagnosed recently with a cancerous illness or a cancer, malignant disease, and you go to the oncologist to get offered treatment or a plan of treatment to get treatment for your cancer. However, an oncologist is able to do much more than that, and in an environment like ours here, where professional advice is let's not say hard to come by, but is not as accessible as in other places. You know, an oncologist can be able to help you in the process of diagnosis of the disease and prevention, screening, etc.
A person's first visit to an oncologist, what are some things that should be discussed with the oncologist?
Very good question. Okay, so what usually happens when a cancer patient visits me for the first time, we sit down and I get to try and get to know exactly what they understand from the diagnosis. Because usually when a cancer patient comes to me, they've seen a surgeon already who's been able to do a biopsy to confirm the type of the disease or type of cancer that they have. So when the patient comes in, I try to get to understand how much they know about the disease before we go into it. How much they know about what the disease is called, if they know what stage it is, what they understand by the word cancer. I try to explain and enlighten the patient as much as possible relating to the nature of the illness. And then we interview the patient to find out what are the risk factors that they have associated and if they're at risk of any other cancers, any complications, etc. during treatment. I try to get a medical history from them to find out a little bit more about them and their illness and how it has presented. And after that, we do a comprehensive physical exam, and I send for any outstanding tests that the patient may require in order to complete their staging or to complete workup in preparation for chemo or radiation or surgery. After that, I sit with the patient and I explain what the plan that I have for them is going forward. We set follow-up dates, and we go from there.
Lately, I found out that there are so many types of cancers that develops in the human body.
Over 300, actually.
Oh, my God. What?
Yeah, over 300 types of cancer.
Well, I didn't even realize it was over 100.
It was over 300.
Wow. What causes cancers to develop in the body?
Okay, the exact cause, as a scientific community, we really don't know for sure what causes cancer, but we do know how it comes about, okay? So there are various things that may put you at risk to develop cancer. We can divide those into modifiable and non-modifiable risks. Meaning modifiable risks are things that we can do to change in our lifestyle that will decrease our risk. And non-modifiable risks are things that we're born with and we're unable to change because they either occurred in the past already or because we were born with these characteristics. Things like modifiable risks, which is the stuff that we can change, would include, for example, smoking. If you're a smoker, that's a very high risk. The use of contraceptives, the diets, medications that you're taking, etc. Or things that you do on a routine, for example, sun exposure. If you're of a clearer complexion, you're at higher risk of skin cancers. So we would advise patients to either, for example, change their diet, do more exercise, don't get as much sunlight, or at least if they're obligated to be exposed to the sun, to use sunscreen, etc. And non-modifiable risks, which are the things, again, that we cannot change, are things like the patient's sex, if they're male or female, things like their age, any family history that predisposes them to develop cancer, any personal medical history that predisposes them to develop cancer, etc.
What type of cancers do you have the most experience treating?
Okay, so me as a medical oncologist, I am certified to diagnose and treat most, if not all, cancers, both blood and solid cancers. However, if you're asking what my personal peak interests are or what I see mostly on a daily basis, then that would include, for example, breast cancer. Uh-huh. In first place, I also see a lot of colon cancer, prostate cancer, gynecological cancers like cervical, ovarian, or endometrial cancer. Okay. Those are the most common types here in Antigua. Also multiple myeloma and lymphomas.
Oh, wow. What's the difference between a gynecologist and an oncologist?
Okay. So a gynecologist is a doctor that specializes in diseases of the female reproductive system. That could include cancers of the gynecological system or female reproductive system. However, most of the time, gynecologists are the ones who would initially diagnose the cancer, and then after the cancer is diagnosed, they would get in touch with an oncologist or refer the patient to an oncologist in order to solidify a plan of treatment. Also, gynecologists are able to, you know, get in contact with an oncologist or a team of other specialists in order to determine this plan. And an oncologist is the doctor who receives the patient after the cancer diagnosis has been made and would treat them. Also, gynecologists and obstetricians deal with women who are pregnant. So that has nothing at all to do with oncology and is out of the field of oncology for the most part.
Mm. Okay. At what age, basically, would you encourage, let's say, for instance, a pap smear to be done or even a prostate check
exam.
To be done? Yes, exam.
Okay, so let's answer this question by trying to encompass all of the cancers that you can screen for, meaning cancers that we can do tests for to detect them either early or prevent them from becoming advanced cancer. So basically, a cancer when it's just starting to grow is more treatable or even curable compared to a cancer that is well-established and advanced locally. Locally meaning in the area where it has arisen. So, for example, a breast cancer can become advanced when it starts to spread to the lymphatics or lymph nodes in the arm or around the breast, or if it starts to invade other structures other than breast. So, for breast disease, for example, we can advise women above the age of 40 or 40 going onwards to start doing their mammograms either once a year or once every 2 years, depending on their risk. That is something that they would have to sit down with an oncologist or another qualified physician to determine how high that risk is. For cervical cancer, we advise pap smears start being done around 5 years after the patient is sexually active. That is because cervical cancer is almost always associated with a virus called human papillomavirus, or HPV. Okay, and that is detected via pap smear, which collects cells from inside of the cervix to be diagnosed or to be assessed by a doctor called a pathologist, who is specialized in how cells and how body tissue looks under a microscope, and is able to tell if the cells that were collected from the pap smear are cancerous, or if they're normal, or if they're in between. When I say in between, it means something called dysplasia, where the cells start to take on a strange aspect, or they start to look different from the normal cells. And also the pap smear tests for viral proteins in the cervix, which may diagnose the patient with the HPV virus, which most commonly is present, as I said before, in cervical cancer. For prostate cancer, patients at the age of 50 plus, male patients, 50 years and older, are advised to start seeing the doctor for yearly PSA exams, which is a blood test that checks for the levels of proteins specific to the prostate, and to do a digital rectal exam once a year as well, to in order for the physician to be able to assess the texture, consistency, size, etc. of the prostate. Also, we can screen for a couple of other cancers as well, like colon cancer, for example, where patients above the age of 50 are advised to do the colonoscopy every 10 years, depending on the risk, every 5 years, or to get yearly fecal occult blood tests. Fecal occult blood test, just to explain, is when a patient collects a stool sample and sends it to the lab to test for any blood in the stool that may not be visible to the naked eye. Hmm. So those are the four main screenable cancers that we're able to prevent or diagnose early in the oncological field.
Hmm. With your experience and knowledge, Are there any natural way of treating any form of cancer?
Okay, very good question. And it is a question that is asked quite frequently. There's no one way to treat. And let me just understand the question. You're asking if for like natural remedies or natural medicine can actually cure the cancer completely?
Yes.
Okay. So I always tell my patients that natural medicine is very important and very good. Okay. However, natural medicine alone has not been proven by any scientific study or investigation to be sufficient on its own in treating any cancer. So conventional medicine usually is paired up with the natural medicine in order to optimize the treatment results and how the patient feels while receiving treatment. So when we treat cancer, we try to approach it from a holistic point of view, meaning from all of the angles, both natural and psychological and emotional and also medical.
How would you respond then if a patient refused?
Conventional medicine?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as I always tell patients, you know, I'm just the advisor, okay? Mm-hmm. The ship is theirs, they're the pilots of the ship. I can only tell them to go left, right, go north, northeast, and tell them what the risk factors of the ship getting into an accident. But in the end, the ultimate say is for the captain of the ship, which is the patient. And if they do respond in that they don't want any conventional therapy, meaning no chemo, no radiation, no surgery, we would have to respect their wishes, and we would formulate a plan either incorporating treatment options or basic supportive options to accommodate the patient's desires. That would include things like, you know, pain management if there's any pain, giving the patient a medication to open the appetite if they don't have an appetite. And basically, we just tailor a treatment plan for the patient to make them as comfortable as possible with the diagnosis that they have, and at the same time taking into account the success of treatment, how likely the treatment is to succeed.
Could you walk us through, if possible, a process of treating a cancer patient?
Sure. This is a very vast question, right?
Mm-hmm,
so
yes.
it's something, no two cancers are treated the same way.
Right.
So depending on the cancer patients, the cancer patient and the type of cancer that they have, the treatment options that are most readily available for the treatment of cancer are one, surgery, two, chemotherapy, which can be divided in itself, to cytotoxic therapy, meaning the conventional chemo drugs that patients are most familiar with hearing about, the ones that drop your hair, make you feel a bit sick, mm-hmm. can drop your blood counts, etc. Then we have targeted therapy, which are drugs that are used to target specific proteins in the cancer. Those cause less side effects usually for the patient, and are usually reserved for treatment of more advanced illness or illnesses that can be cured but require the immunotherapy, the targeted therapy. And then lastly, we have, within the systemic therapy or chemotherapy, we have things called immunotherapy. These are medications that are designed to teach your immune system how to battle the cancer itself, or what are specific characteristics of the cancer cells that the immune system can target and destroy. So we've covered surgery, chemotherapy, and the last modality of treatment in the treatment of cancer is radiation therapy. Now, it can be confused with radiology, which is the science of imaging, meaning say ultrasound, MRI, CT scan. Radiation therapy is the use of X-rays or radiation at higher doses than an average X-ray in order to treat cancer.
Mm. Okay.
And they use it usually to control the disease locally, or meaning where it arises. So if it's a breast cancer, then we would use radiation therapy in order to treat the area where the breast mass was removed in order to prevent that disease from coming back in the breast.
Hmm. Okay. Do you see, Dr. Yazigi, do you see a one-shot cure for cancer in the future?
Ah, that is a very interesting question, and I can tell you've done your homework before this interview. So the likelihood of finding a one-size-fits-all mm-hmm. cure for cancer is very, very low.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because each cancer has different receptors, different types of cells, different characteristics, different levels of aggression. For example, in breast cancer, all right, you would remove the lump and you'd then give chemotherapy, radiation, and maybe hormone treatment if needed. But in something like a lymphoma, no surgery is advised. Only to diagnose, you have a biopsy done, and the rest would be up to chemotherapy and or radiation to treat. The proteins inside of the cells that cause them to grow and get and spread in each cancer are different as well. So we'd have to find a common protein in all different cancers that we could lock down that is not a protein available in all normal cells in the body in order to decrease the amount of side effects that you get. So the one trick pony or the one size fit all treatment for cancer, I think, is maybe not impossible. It's improbable, let's put it like that, at least in the immediate future.
Okay. What are some questions your patients will ask you, especially when they come into you?
Ironically enough, the most commonly asked question that I get is not how curable it is, not how long do I have to live, and these are questions that are asked. But the most common question is what should I eat during treatment, or what should I eat in general? And the answer to that question most of the time is, general measures, low salt, low sugar diet, a high fiber diet, and try to increase the amount of vegetables that you eat and decrease the amount of fried food and red meats that you eat. And that's basically my diet plan. However, I do always advise them to get a second opinion from a nutritionist, because some patients come with different issues, for example, diabetics or hypertensives, and they need specific amounts of different food groups. The main food groups are carbohydrates, fats, proteins. And what we try to do is to try and balance them perfectly for each patient, depending on the patient characteristics. Another very frequently asked question, and I think you covered this already, is how can I use natural medicine to treat this cancer, if possible? Mm-hmm. And my response is usually the same as the response I give you.
All right. Okay. Are there any success stories professionally you would like to share?
Oh, there's many. you ask the question as if it's only one or two patients that stick out. But let's put it this way. For cervical cancer, for example, at stage 1 and 2, almost 100% success rate. Breast cancer, the same. Colon cancer, the same. Almost 90% success rate in colon cancer at stage 1 and 2, if not more. And basically, if I am to be honest, most cancers, if treatment modalities are available and they're able to receive all of the treatment modalities that are recommended by the international guidelines at stage 1 and 2, most of the time these are curable. So there are many success stories.
And what is the cause for that high success story?
Well, because, as I said, when it's stage 1 or 2, it's still classified as early cancer. All right? So the cancer hasn't started to spread. In most cases, it hasn't started to spread anywhere. Mm-hmm. Some cancers are more aggressive, for example, cancer of the pancreas, cancers of the lung, cancers of the liver, or the biliary tree. Those are notoriously aggressive cancers, and even at stage 1 or 2, the chance of them returning is very high because of how much blood vessels surround them and how aggressive the cells themselves are and are able to spread at the early stage. And because some cancers are more resistant to things like chemo and radiation therapy than others, and some cancers are inoperable and they cannot be operated even at earlier stages. But those things like lymphomas and leukemias that are diagnosed at the earlier stage and are not operable, especially if they're blood-borne cancers, usually they do very, very well as well, with almost 100% success rate in most cases.
So then how would you share with our listeners the importance of, I'm trying to
early
find
diagnosis.
That. Yes, early diagnosis. Thank you very much.
There's no emphasis that I can put on early diagnosis that can do it justice. The only way that I see it to cure cancer or have at least the highest possible chance of cure of cancer is diagnosing it early or preventing it from happening in the first place, as is the case of cervical cancer.
Any last words, Dr. Yazeji?
Okay, so last words that I would love to share with the audience, and I hope they take it seriously at heart, because it is something that I'm very passionate about. If you feel a lump, if you notice that something is wrong with your body, if you think that you may have cancer, go to your doctor. Don't be scared. If you feel a small lump, for example, in the breast or under the arm or in the groin, etc., or if you see any abnormal bleeding or any change in your bowel habit, meaning you're going to the bathroom more often than usual, less often than usual, if there's blood in the stool, any changes in the characteristics of your urine, etc., any blood in the urine, etc., don't fear to go to the doctor. Please do go to the doctor, because if it is not advanced, then we can cure it if it is cancer. And if it is giving you symptoms, it is probably starting to become advanced. So don't let it reach that stage. If you know that you haven't done your screening, for example, your mammogram, your breast exam, your pap smear, the fecal occult blood, the visit with your urologist or your doctor or oncologist for your digital rectal exam or PSA if you're a man, then please do go get those. Get them routinely. Get them every year. And be proactive in your health. Change your diet. If you're eating a lot of fried food, a lot of salty foods, a lot of junk food, all right, change your diet, because it is something that can help reduce your risk. Avoid things that are made of plastic as much as possible. Of course, we cannot completely refrain from using plastics, but refrain from using them as much as physically possible. Try and do an exercise at least 4 times a week for 30 minutes. Basic general measures. Screening above all.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Yazeji, Chief Oncologist at Celeste Bird Medical Center. Thank you so much for speaking with me. I really appreciate you giving this time to the listener and myself. I wish you every success in this field. May God be with you. As you treat, help, and support your patients.
And thank you so much for well-researched and well-focused questions.
So thank you very much.
God bless you.
Okay, God bless you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening in on our conversation. We trust that it was beneficial to you as you continue to develop a more meaningful life. Do you have a topic or a guest you would like us to have a conversation with for a future episode on Lighthouse Conversations? We would love to hear your suggestions. Send us a mail at Caribbean Radio Lighthouse, P.O. Box 1057, St. John's, Antigua, or lighthouse, B-I-M-I, at gmail.com, or give us a call at area code 268-462-1454, or send us a message via WhatsApp or text at area code 268-782-1454. Thanks for listening. Remember, you can hear Lighthouse Conversations Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. on the Caribbean Radio Lighthouse. If you're in Antigua, you can listen at 92.3 MHz FM. If you're in the Caribbean, you can listen at 1160 kHz AM or listen online at www.radiolighthouse.org from anywhere in the world. Or you can subscribe to this podcast. Looking forward to having you join us next time. Bye-bye.